Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Ohio House has passed a two-year, $69 billion state spending plan that includes some tax cuts and increased spending on education and children. The plan now heads to the Ohio Senate, so it's a good thing to talk about on our weekly Reporters Roundtable. Joining us now is Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles. Welcome back.
Great to be here.
And also Cincinnati Enquirer State Government reporter Jesse Ballmer. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Dayton Daily News State Government reporter Laura Bischoff. Welcome back, Laura.
Hello, listeners.
So the House has approved its version of the two-year state budget with lots of Republican and Democratic votes, very bipartisan. It's dominated by Republicans. So, but tell us about it. What stood out to you, Laura Bischoff?
Well, you know, they decided to dial back on this business tax write-off that's been in place for about 4 years, maybe?
2015, I think it was.
Okay.
So, yeah,
so about four years.
Yeah.
And basically allows LLCs, sole proprietorships, partnerships to avoid paying state income taxes on the first $250,000 of income. And the Democrats and a lot of tax reform people thought that it was just a big fat giveaway, and they've reduced the there's there's talk about how, you know, oh, there's all these business filings and Ohio's booming. Well, some people say that it's because people are forming LLCs so that they can take advantage of this. And so anyway, they dialed it back to 100,000 as the threshold for avoiding taxes, which is still, you know, pretty generous. I don't know if that's going to survive in the Senate or not. We'll see.
The cut.
Yeah, to reduce it from $250,000 to $100,000. And then, you know, they decided to eliminate the lowest two tax brackets.
Right.
So people making less than $22,500 a year would not pay state income taxes. So those, you know.
And do you think that'll survive the Senate, or is that questionable as well?
You know,
it's hard to
I'm
imagine
not sure.
paying taxes
I'm,
on making
yeah,
just 22,000
I'm not sure how much they actually contribute,
anyway.
So that might be seen more as a goodwill gesture than anything. Because
like
I'm
that's
not,
the poorest of the poor working.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know, if you're making 22,000, chances are you shouldn't be paying a whole lot in taxes, if anything.
It also gives an across the board 6.6% cut for everybody else. Of course, it's a state budget, so they're going to have some sort of tax policy changes.
It's long before July 1st, which means they have a lot of time to monkey with it.
Yeah, although, you know, TikTok, it still has to go through the Senate and then the conference committee, and then the governor needs to go through and decide what to
keep and what to do.
Yeah, you know, it's a fiscal bill, so he will have line item veto authority over it. And right now that baby runs 3,534 pages. I bet it's going to get longer
counting,
in the Senate.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, who knows what else is tucked in there.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the tax stuff is tied to each other. So you pull one string and something comes out the other end. Mm-hmm. So the changes to the pass-through entities, making those changes to what Democrats have called the LLC loophole, will affect the ability to pay for those other tax cuts. There were also a number of tax exemptions that were taken out, such as the motion picture tax credit, which gives some basically like reduces the income taxes on salaries of people doing work on movies and other such production efforts. That's something that the House really wants to get rid of. That's something that the Senate has promised to put back in.
Oh, okay.
So if you're pulling on some of these strings, it's going to have effects in other places.
Yeah, you know, my colleague Karen Kassler did some coverage on that motion picture tax credit. And, you know, the problem with a lot of these things, including the LLC loophole, is it's hard to quantify exactly. It's hard to quantify exactly how much these contribute to the economy. The whole idea behind that LLC loophole thing was that they wanted, you know, businesses to grow and hire people and all of that. But we really haven't seen that in the stats so far that that's actually happened. So, I mean, you know, in the same way with the motion picture tax credit, I mean, how do you actually, you know, qualify how that's working? It's very hard to do that.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It is our weekly reporter roundtable. You just heard from Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Also with us, Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News and Jesse Ballmer of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Yeah, Laura.
Oh, I was going to say there's also a provision in there to require ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft to collect sales taxes on behalf of the drivers. So that's going to be unpopular with the ride-sharing public. You know, the budget is mostly about dollars and cents, but there's all, you know, there's also
some policy
issue. One of the big ones is to increase the tobacco and vaping product purchase age across the state to 21, up from the current 18. There's been a number of cities in Ohio that have already increased the purchase age. Surprisingly, the American Cancer Society doesn't like the wording on it right now.
Why so?
They say there's just not enough mechanisms for penalties and enforcement. So it may be kind of a toothless.
And it's in the budget because that affects tax revenues from the sales of that, right? Is that why? Or
well, also I think it's a way to get it passed.
Because that budget has to
the budget is a massive policy document, and this is something that Governor Mike DeWine had in his version of the budget that the House kept in, and you know, just more in line with his desire to protect children and really focus on their health.
There is a big educational component in it. They took out, or they decided they're not going to address the eternal issue of school funding inequities, at least for now. But it did increase spending on education, increases spending on children's services. It raises teachers' base salary from $20,000 to $30,000. I didn't know Ohio had a $20,000 base salary. That's something.
I don't think hardly any districts pay that.
Okay,
it might be just like a handful.
I mean, even
$30,000
a year seems
way
low.
We spoke with Melissa Cropper over at the Ohio Federation of Teachers, and this seems more like a symbolic gesture more than a thing that's actually going to raise teachers' salaries. But the minimum hasn't been increased since around 2001, so it's something that Householder wanted to do, the Speaker of the Ohio House.
Good.
But like Laura said, very few people make under that threshold. And basically teachers groups are saying if you really want to give them a raise, increase it to 40,000 or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say even 30,000 seems way low. And as far as spending on education in general, though, what are we looking at?
Well, they have I think, you know, the governor proposed like $500 million over the biennium for what he calls wraparound services. This would be for mental health services, school counselors, et cetera. And they boosted that up an extra $125 million. So I think we're looking at $625. They have an earmark in there to help some schools, districts to buy new buses. But it's only like $20 million that when you're buying buses, that's not going to go super far.
No, they're super expensive.
They're also going to encourage establishing a program to provide free breakfast for all students at schools where at least 70% of the kids are eligible for free or reduced lunch or meals, rather. They're going to let community colleges charge an extra $5 per credit hour on their fees.
So if you're looking for a kind of whole scale reform of the system, you're not going to find it in this budget. But there are a number of dollars set aside to fix things that people see as problems, like mental health services or nursing services.
Those wraparound things.
Those kind of wraparound things. There's also a provision that allows lower income students to get some money to take like advanced placement tests. So there's a lot of things in there that both Republicans and Democrats like for helping students in schools, but the underlying problems of the system are still there.
How did Larry Householder work with Democrats on this? Because as I mentioned earlier, he did get quite a few Democratic votes, and usually they just fold their arms and shake their heads.
These are things that Democrats have wanted for a very long time before. I mean, you know, if you talk to them 5, 10 years ago, these are things they were clamoring for, a lot of these things.
So I guess the question is, how did they do getting the Republicans to vote for it?
That was more the question. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And he had enough, you know, to get through, obviously. But you find even more and more, not just the budget, but on other things, too. Speaker Larry Householder, the Republican, is working more with Democrats than ever in the past recent history.
Since Republicans have controlled, so
there were 9 votes against the budget bill, and
eight
of them were Republican. There was only one Democrat.
Wow.
And that comes close to the bipartisanship that I think Ted Strickland had in his first budget bill, there was only one vote against it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Diana Fessler.
That's notable. Now,
I think it's also worth noting a lot of the ideas that Governor DeWine introduced were things that Democrats were on board with to begin
another
with.
Another facet that's changed is another facet of the equation is.
So really where you're going to see the conservative voice on this budget is going to come from the Ohio Senate.
And so how is Larry Householder working with Larry Obhoff, who's the Senate president?
The two Larrys.
The Laristocracy. How do Larry and Larry get along? Because that's a big part of what the House gets to keep, what's kept from the House. Do they have much of a relationship?
It's unclear to me. I think they're very different Larrys. And I hear Larry Householder, speaking about his relationship with Mike DeWine more so than I ever hear him speaking about it with his relationship.
They go back farther, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think Larry Obhoff will say, "Well, it is a process, and we're going to see how the budget comes across to us, and we're going to do our due diligence on it, et cetera." And neither chamber really cedes any ground to the other. It seems like there's more of a conflict between the two chambers than there is between the Democrats and Republicans.
Which happens when you have such a domination by one party.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, they eat their own kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Happens all the time. We will continue our conversation. This is our weekly reporter roundtable. Just heard from Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News. Also with us, Jesse Balmert of the Cincinnati Enquirer and Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Going to move on and talk a little bit about possible optimism for the Lordstown plant, recently vacated by GM and maybe sold to another company out of Cincinnati. But the governor has urged caution. So we'll talk about that and more. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
In WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It is our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us, Ohio Public Radio State House News reporter Joe Ingles, Cincinnati Enquirer State Government reporter Jesse Balmert, and Dayton Daily News State Government reporter Laura Bischoff. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about everything from the state budget to whatever is going to happen to that Lordstown plant, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The governor has taken a more cautious approach to the news of a possible sale of the Lordstown plant. Let's listen to what he had to say.
As far as Lordstown, this is probably not yet the day to celebrate. This is a day where we may be moving forward. We're certainly not going to sit around and not try to make things happen.
It's so different, the tone of Governor DeWine from Governor Kasich. It's so different. It's kind of still shocking. But anyhow, President Trump tweeted last week that the Cincinnati area electric truck company Workhorse is in talks to buy the shuttered Lordstown plant. So he's up on what's going on. What do we know about these talks?
Anybody? It was really funny. because it happened right during the tourism event at the State House, and Governor DeWine was out there for that. And the tweet comes through from President Trump, and it's like, great news for Ohio,
okay.
You know, really, you know. And then we talked to DeWine after the event, and he seems to be like, well, you know, it doesn't really have a strong, you know, opinion or much to say on it. And then he goes off and he says, wait a minute. And he goes off. He starts talking on the phone. He's talking with Mary Barra at the
CEO of GM.
Yeah, CEO of GM. And then he comes back and he talks to us. And he was not nearly, I don't know, my read on it was that he was not nearly as great news for Ohio as President Trump was, right?
Okay, he's more cautious. Yeah.
So there are essentially two parts of what Mary Barra had in a conversation with both the president and the governor, the first of which is saying that GM itself is going to invest about 450 jobs into three plants in Ohio, not including the Lordstown plant. And then the second bit of news is that they're in conversations with this Loveland area, Cincinnati area business called Workhorse. And the first seems much more firm than the second. We talked with Workhorse, and they're saying that they're in the very early stages of possibly wrestling up some money to be part of a larger project to purchase this thing. And it is completely reliant on them receiving this U.S. Postal Service contract to make next generation postal trucks, basically. They're one of five finalists. And if they get this deal, it would be billions of dollars for their company, which currently has about 98 employees. And a day before Trump's tweet, the company disclosed to regulators that it could be insolvent by next month. Oh. So this is there's a reason that the governor is being more cautious about this deal. And I think it's something that certainly could happen for the people of Lordstown. But Governor DeWine even said that if this doesn't come through, if either GM or other people like are overinflating this, it's really cruel to those workers to give them this hope.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the UAW, they basically were saying the same thing. They're very skeptical because at this point, it doesn't look like there's a sure shot of it by any means. And it looks like a way for GM to kind of wipe its hands and walk away, you know? And they want, the UAW wants GM to actually manufacture another product there. In that space.
Well, that's kind of not in the cards either. I mean,
well, not in the cards, but it makes it easier for GM to walk away if they can say, well, this company is going to come in and do this or that, you know, but if that company doesn't, if that doesn't come to fruition, then, you know, it's not much help.
You know, I think this is an example of where the president wants the headline to match his rhetoric.
Right.
This is about reelection. You know, obviously, this is really good news, the fact that they're going to invest something like $700 million into plants in Toledo, Parma, and Marin and add jobs there. The second, like Jesse says, the second half, the Workhorse part, is really not a done deal. And I think that the governor just recognizes he doesn't want to get too far out ahead of this.
Yeah, again, very different tones.
And really, the president has been hit by Democrats. I mean, most notably Tim Ryan, who is running for president on the Democratic side from that area. But other Democrats have gone and visited Lordstown. It's seen as really a symbol of, you know, if Donald Trump can pull this out, yes, he's that person who's bringing jobs back to these underserved areas. But if he can't, it's just an example of broken promises.
The president's not actually involved in any of this, is he?
It depends on what's happening there. He likes, you know, he likes to talk it up at his rallies and go to those areas and talk about how great it is. Don't sell your home there, Lordstown, because, you know, things are coming back bigger and better than ever. But, you know, yeah, you're right. As far as, you know, there's a lot that goes into it other than Donald Trump. So
you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. We are talking about all things state government related. And going back to the budget, you mentioned that the Ohio House version eliminates the $40 million per year film tax credit, but that the Senate may have other thoughts about that. The Senate unanimously passed a measure last week that would add Broadway shows to the list of productions that can qualify for the state's tax credit. What's going on?
Well, I mean,
why do we know the Senate? Why is it the Senate has such different thoughts about these kind of things?
Well, you know, Matt Dolan over there, he's very involved in this, and he, you know, his take on this is that it's an economic boom for Ohio. And
is there evidence of that?
Well, you know, again, going back to that comment about that I made about trying to get really, you know, hard figures on it, it's really difficult. But here's the other part of it: we've got a lot of other states in the country that are offering these kind of credits, so. If you want to keep productions coming to Ohio and you want to keep this going, if neighboring states or other states are looking at or offering this and you're not, it makes it harder to get those. And especially if you're up in the Cleveland area. I mean, Cleveland really has had more of these productions than anywhere else in the state, I think. Mm-hmm. And they're really very solidly into this up there. They want this to be around for, different shows that come in.
Ohio may allow medical marijuana to treat anxiety and autism. Mm-hmm. The state medical board is expected next month to decide whether people can obtain medical marijuana for anxiety and autism. They said that they expected to expand the number of conditions that could be treated with medical marijuana. Laura Bischoff, is this just the beginning?
Yeah. So the original law set up like 21 different conditions. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you add in anxiety and autism, that's a lot of people. Similarly, I think that probably the biggest current condition that it's allowed that would catch a lot of folks would be chronic pain. Mm-hmm. And cancer. So, you know, the medical board, I think, had like set up a special panel to review, you know, requests to add conditions, et cetera. So we'll see what comes of it.
Other states have allowed those conditions to be on their medical marijuana lists.
Ohio started out pretty conservatively.
Right.
But said that it would be open to.
Yeah. And I think they are looking at other states because some of the conditions that they threw out that they're not allowing are things that other states are not allowing. So I think that might have been playing into it, too.
And it seems like this is something that the full board is going to vote on the conditions in June. And my colleague Jackie Borchert reported on this. And there are, you know, an estimated 44,000 Ohio children have autism, an estimated 1.6 million Ohioans have anxiety, have been diagnosed. And so this could expand greatly the number of people who would have access to the program.
How is the medical marijuana, how's it going? Is it kind of off the radar now? People aren't talking about it? It doesn't seem like they're crazed.
I feel like I was writing about it nonstop, and I haven't written about it lately.
It's not up and running fully, right. I would say, because they still, when it started in September, there was no product available. Then it became product became available on a limited basis in mid-January. Since then, things have been very slow. Things have been moving very slowly. And so right now, I think there are still some bugs to work out in the system because there are a lot of people who have gone to a doctor and got the recommendation to use it, mm-hmm. but they're not using it. And we don't know exactly why they're not using it because we don't, you know, have access to call everyone and say, hey, you've got a card. Why aren't you using mm-hmm. this? But one of the things could be that it's very expensive still. It is on a limited basis. And we're just starting to get some processors online who can put it out there in a format that a lot of people can use.
And insurance doesn't cover it.
And insurance doesn't cover it. And I mean, it can be, you know, $50, $60 a day, depending on where you buy it right now. It can be $50, $60 a day without insurance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, quite frankly, the street value of it is way lower. Mm-hmm. So, and it's unsafe on the streets, by the way.
You can get it in Michigan. But it's legal in Michigan, and they'll take the Ohio cards.
They
and
will
much more and variety and
right, exactly.
There's some challenges with that, I think. But yeah, like I said, Jackie has reported the average price, at least in the beginning, was hovering around $470 per ounce in Ohio, and that was more than double the median price in Michigan. So that's a bit of a challenge. At least in the Cincinnati area, there's no place to purchase it yet. So there are parts of the state that really don't have access so far. So I think it's slowly getting up and running, but it's certainly not accessible to everyone.
And Michigan passed the recreational marijuana. Now that they could have a tourism thing. Come for the lakes, stay for the marijuana.
stay. There is a new bill. It's been introduced that would ban most private insurance coverage of abortions. Joe Ingles, you wrote about that 1/5 of the members of the Ohio House, all Republicans, have signed on to House Bill 182. Tell us about it. What would it do?
Well, actually, what it might do is take insurance coverage away from certain types of contraception.
It would ban insurance. What if an insurance company wants to cover?
No, it would ban them. It would ban private insurance companies. Now, you know, the exception would be, say, you're a big company and you're self-insured. Okay. Well, then you get
like
to
Ohio
do that.
State.
Right. If you have your own insurance and you're not buying it from an insurance
Ohio State's public, not a good
company,
example. Maybe nationwide. I don't know.
Who has their own? I'm not sure who has their own.
Yeah,
but it's a really big company that would have to take that kind of risk. Yeah. So, and that they wouldn't mess with that. But the rest of them, it would basically ban insurance from being used to use anything that's called an abortifacient. And now,
that's different.
That's something that might cause an abortion. And you know, when you get there, there's a lot of disagreement over what that is. But basically, the way it's written, it could ban IUDs from being covered under insurance.
That's a birth control method.
Right. Intrauterine devices. Mm-hmm. And it could also ban some birth control pills, which is a very common method of birth control. But, you know, some birth control pills are considered abortifacient.
Abortifacient meaning that it destroys after the egg has been fertilized.
Right. Okay. Right. And so, I mean, you know, there's I think it's important to note, and I wrote the story on it, noting this at the top, that more than 1/5 of the representatives in the Ohio legislature are signed on to this as sponsors. So it does have backing. It's not something that someone threw up there and no one's backing it.
It's sticking to the wall, in other words. So what are the chances? I mean,
well, you got to get the other, you know. You got to get another 3/5 or, you know, you got to get more people to back it. And of course, the Democrats have come out pretty harsh against it. And even some Republicans are coming out saying, you know, this goes too far. And it's not endorsed, nor is it opposed by Ohio Right to Life. So right now, they're not really taking a stand on it. And Ohio Right to Life is the largest anti-abortion group in the state of Ohio. They're kind of focused on some other abortion legislation that's coming down. And we should learn more about it tomorrow. But it's something about using when a woman uses abortion drugs, apparently there's two of them.
Like the day after pill? That
No. When you go to an abortion clinic, you can get they give you a medication abortion. Apparently, it's like two different drugs.
Okay.
And you take one and then you wait and you take another one. And so there's something about you can stop the process of a medication abortion, and they want to give information to people to stop the process, how to stop the process midway. Or I'll know more tomorrow because we'll be covering that tomorrow when they announce it. But at any rate, a lot of people are saying, wait, that's really not a thing. So, you know, a lot of people are saying that, you know, one of the things about the bill, the birth control bill, is that the sponsor of it had said, well, you know, when it comes to an ectopic pregnancy, you know, that's a reason for an abortion sometimes. And an ectopic pregnancy is where
the fertilized egg is growing outside of the uterus.
Right. Usually on the fallopian tube or something. So he's saying you can take that and you can transplant it in the uterus. And
listeners,
then
this is not possible.
Right.
I don't want to.
Yeah. Doctors, by and large, are saying this cannot happen. They wish it could, but it cannot happen. According to a lot of doctors.
Yeah. You can die from an ectopic pregnancy.
Exactly.
You can. And it does give it basically bans abortions for an ectopic pregnancy unless the woman's life is in danger. So that could be read to
which
mean
it almost
rupture.
Always is if you don't.
So it's questionable whether that would actually have an effect, because most ectopic pregnancies, or maybe almost all, would
if they're
risk
left
to woman's life, so it would be covered.
So, okay, were you going to say something about House Bill 182?
Yeah, sure. Just to Joe's point, the actual language in the bill is drugs or devices used to prevent the implantation of a fertilized ovum.
Okay.
And so that's where opponents of this proposal say that language is just far too broad and could cover all manner of things, including a number of birth control methods. And so it'll be interesting where that goes.
Has there been any litigation yet in Ohio regarding the heartbeat bill that just passed and was signed into law?
Not yet, but it's promised. And they have 90 days to bring that. Yeah. So the ACLU is saying they are going to take it.
And it hasn't gone into effect.
It has not.
It has not yet gone into effect. It will be challenged before it goes into effect by the ACLU of Ohio, as they said.
Right.
And that will go to a federal court judge, and then we'll see what happens there. I'm sure they will ask to delay or stay the law from taking effect.
As they have in other states.
As they have in other states. There is pending litigation over the bill that would ban abortions after a fetal diagnosis of Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So that one is a initial judge has already decided to put that on pause, but they're still waiting on appeals, I think.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You'd think that, like, maybe the heartbeat bill, having that passed and signed by the governor, that would have kind of allowed the lawmakers to, you know, move on, focus on other stuff. But it's interesting that even more abortion restrictions are on the minds of a lot of lawmakers.
Yeah.
Well, actually, even speaking with Representative John Becker, who introduced this bill that would ban most private insurance coverage of abortion, he was saying that this is something that he had introduced back in like 2013, 2014, hadn't really brought it up since then. But because of how quickly the heartbeat bill moved through the legislature, felt like, hey, this group of lawmakers is interested in bills like this, and let's give it another shot.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a tone of that in the legislature right now. They think, oh, we can pass all these abortion bills, so let's go for it.
Sarah in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. My comment is, you know, all this stuff against abortion, where is the money going to come from to pay for all these babies that are going to need to get raised? With all of the dings against our social safety network, hello, you know.
Okay, Sarah, thanks a lot. Do they address that issue in any of this legislation?
I don't think in the legislation, but I have to say that I think that the DeWine administration, you know, the governor's very anti-abortion. He signed the heartbeat bill.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he is investing a lot of money in, or wants to invest a lot of the state money in things like foster care, early childhood visits, home visits for pregnant and new baby, or pregnant women and their new babies. Children's services money. So, yes, there has been a big reduction and hits taken in the child protective services arena over the last decade or so. But I think that Governor DeWine is looking to rebuild that.
But that argument that your caller made is one that the Democrats often make when we are listening to debate on these particular proposals, mm-hmm. like where is comprehensive sex education? Where are some of these things that maybe could prevent unwanted pregnancies to begin with?
You know, it's interesting. When the heartbeat bill passed the Senate floor, there was some agreement, I think, between Dave Burke, a Republican from Marysville, and Nikki Antonio, Democrat from Lakewood.
Mm-hmm. Lakewood.
When I was messed that up. Lakewood. So they were talking about, you know, working on issues of comprehensive sex education. Ohio does not have model curriculum in the health area. I think we're only one of a handful of states that lacks that.
Right.
And I haven't really heard whether or not Burke and Antonio, if they've started working on that or not.
Is there a sense of where Ohio ranks at this point in terms of the abortion issue and abortion rights issues?
Well, I think that Ohio and Texas have long been
the most restrictive,
the forefront of moving a lot of these restrictions.
Okay. We will continue our conversation with our weekly reporter roundtable, Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, Jesse Ballmert of the Cincinnati Enquirer, and Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is our weekly reporter roundtable. Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, Jesse Ballmert of the Cincinnati Enquirer, and Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau are still with us. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost has been in the news lately. He removed a taxpayer-funded video produced by his office. He removed it from the state website after it was embedded in a campaign fundraising email. Tell us what's going on with this. Laura Bischoff, do you know?
So there's a little thing that campaigns and public offices sometimes do, which is they just post, you know, high-quality images or videos for anyone to grab, unbeknownst to them.
Yeah.
And I think that was what the case was here, where they posted it and then they grabbed it and they repurposed
it. But it was produced by Yost's office as a public elected.
Each of these offices
officials
have pretty robust video media handling promotional staff, people with high-end video skills, photographers.
Doesn't take much nowadays.
Well, if you want something really good, I could shoot it with my iPhone, but it wouldn't necessarily look that great.
So what does he mean when he says the video sent the wrong message? What's the is there a conflict here?
Well, I think the conflict was that he didn't like all this
attention,
controversy over it. But, the video itself was talking about his first 100 days in office and his accomplishments and that sort of thing.
Weren't we all waited with bated breath to talk about him?
Well, apparently this is the thing. Everyone needs to, the governor did the same thing, talked about
That's
his first.
Governor,
but apparently everyone needs to talk about their first 100 days in office. So. But, he said it won't happen again. Hmm. He said that he's going to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So we'll have to wait and see.
The Ohio Attorney General also asked last week that the state delay the federal court ruling instructing the Ohio General Assembly to draw a new congressional map by June 14th. I think they turned him down on that, right? What was amount to a stay.
Yeah, the trio of judges who made the initial ruling like a couple Fridays ago that this was a unconstitutional partisan gerrymander said, no, we would still like the Ohio lawmakers to make us a new map by mid-June. The state has asked the U.S. Supreme Court for a stay on this, and I think that's a more likely place where they would get this delayed just because the U.S. Supreme Court is looking at cases in North Carolina and Maryland. The maps drawn there. Michigan is in a similar place as Ohio is because they had judges say that their maps were problematic. And so now they're looking for some guidance. So basically, we're waiting to see if the U.S. Supreme Court will put a delay on this or whether Ohio lawmakers are going to come up with a new map by mid-June.
Also, the U.S. Supreme Court is supposed to rule by the end of June, I think, on the North Carolina and Maryland cases and maybe something else in that stew. Anyway, the U.S. Supreme Court is supposed to decide whether or not federal courts can decide partisan gerrymanders or if
All right. So meanwhile, back at the ranch, there is this June 15th. We're almost exactly a month away from that deadline. Can they June 14th.
Yeah.
Can they whip something up or are they at work on it? Or
I don't think there's a will among the majority Republicans
so they're
to
just
whip something
it
up.
At this
they're
point,
just kind of ignoring it or at least overtly ignoring it. Who knows what they're thinking behind closed doors. But there's no team out there working on it at this point. And the Democrats are urging majority lawmakers to work on it. They, you know, of course, they like this ruling because they think the map, they've always thought this map had some issues, mm-hmm. even though some of them voted for it back when the map passed, you know, in the legislature, they voted for it.
What is the significance of that? Because they keep pointing out, when I talked to the attorney for the one of the parties in it, I guess the governor or the legislature or lawmakers defending the map, he says, well, it was a bipartisanly approved map. So what's the importance of that, Jesse Ballmer? Why does that matter? Or is that just on paper?
Well, I think Democrats at the time thought that was the deal that they could get.
Right.
That certainly currently there are 12 U.S. representatives for Ohio. 12 of them are Republican. 4 of them are Democratic. Those 4 Democratic seats are probably just as safe as some of the Republican seats. So it certainly benefits people like Joyce Beatty here in the Columbus area.
That's long been a problem of changing how it's done would affect people, Democrats who have safe seats as well.
Right.
Yeah. So I think for Republicans, they can point to saying like, hey, it wasn't just us making these crazy lines. But they obviously were the ones in control of the chamber. They were the ones holding the pen, and they would be the ones holding the pen again this time because Republicans are still in control of the Ohio House and the Ohio Senate. So, yes, to everyone's point, I don't think they're eager to draw a new map right now.
Yeah, Laura, the other argument is that, you know, the voters just approved a new process, mm-hmm. and that's supposed to take effect after the next after the 2020 census. So, and we've already used these maps for several cycles. So that's, I mean, the Republicans are kind of like, you know, let's put some woe on this. Like, hold on a second. Let's go with the new process that the voters approved and just see what the U.S. Supreme Court.
And so why not? Decides. Why don't the Democrats want to do that?
Because the maps are terrible for Democrats. I mean,
but eventually the process changes, so why not wait until
after 2020?
Yeah,
but you're talking one election there, one crucial election that the map could change for them. You know, if it's one election, that's, you know, one election.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Right, 2020.
When most voters go to the polls to vote for president, so you get big turnout and lots at stake.
And another underlying issue of this is it will be a presidential race, and people are more enthusiastic to go out and vote for congressional races where they feel like their candidate could win. So I think you could drum up more enthusiasm in certain parts of the state if there were more competitive races, and that certainly plays a role in who will be elected president in Ohio as well.
To what extent did, when they said they had to redraw the map by June 14th, how much guidance did the federal court give?
So in one regard, they wrote a 301-page entry, so you could look through all of that and find a lot of examples of what not to do. On the other hand, they didn't put a like 40-point list of here's what you must do, here's what you must not do. I think it's clear that they would like fewer counties, fewer municipalities divided because the current map has quite a few.
The cracking and packing issue.
You know, they could just conceivably just apply the rules that the voters endorsed and just go ahead and, you know, try that out
a couple years early. Yeah.
Ohio has a significant backlog in processing Medicaid applications, and it's drawn federal scrutiny. I'm wondering, do you guys know about why there is this backlog? No, I'm getting shakes of head. Okay. So what are you guys covering this week?
I'm going to be following up on this big Dayton corruption case.
FBI
and Department of Justice rolled out 4 indictments against very prominent folks in Dayton, including former state lawmaker Clayton Luckey, who went to prison for 3 years on state corruption charges.
He got out,
and according to the indictment, which is an allegation, unproven, and they're pleading not guilty, but it says that just within months of his release from prison, he started a new scam to act as a front, a minority business enterprise front for to help another company get some city demolition contracts. And there's also indicted as a longtime former Dayton City Commissioner, who's a bank executive, and then the son of one of a former lawmaker. So it's kind of a big mess, and Department of Justice says this is the first wave, and there is more coming.
What are you covering, Jesse Ballmer?
Yeah, I think another thing that's coming up here soon is going to be a vote on this proposal to help out some energy companies, and some of that money would go towards one big recipient of that could be First Energy Solutions, which has
so
two
nuclear plants yeah.
here in Ohio. There has been some pushback on that proposal, which was has the backing of the Speaker Larry Householder. Some concerns about that some of this money could go towards gas and coal, which are not really renewable energy sources. Some concerns that this gets rid of kind of the stick that was making these energy companies move towards more renewable energy.
Forcing them to invest more in renewables.
Forcing them to invest more in renewables. And so it's a controversial proposal. It's something that I think is going to get a lot of debate before it ultimately gets a floor vote.
It's a separate bill, right? It's not involved.
It's not in the budget.
It's not in the budget. Right. Okay.
Right. And there's a lot of money behind this. Right now, there's something like $800,000 in TV and radio ads placed on both sides. There's a big group called Generation Now mm-hmm. that wants it to go through paying for ads. There's a smaller consumer group that has a much smaller buy. And then I think there's like Ohioans Against Nuclear Bailouts or something that they've got a big buy. So, you know, there's some clout behind this.
It's interesting because you might be seeing this in commercials on your airwaves, which is not really something we've seen on a piece of legislation in a bit.
But it's big money. I mean, this is the, you know.
Renewables have already been hit hard in Ohio in the last 5 or 6 years by when they
They changed the wind setbacks.
Yeah, they changed the wind setbacks, and they also changed how they got tax breaks. Well, they've changed everything. They put it on hold, right?
Well, the big one is the setbacks, basically
for wind,
you know, you
yeah.
have to have for your wind turbines, you need to control a really big chunk of property in order to
be apart from other than the adjacent.
Right, you have to be further set back from your neighbor's property in order to put up a wind turbine, and so that has kind of quashed a lot of the wind projects that were in the planning stages.
And when the speaker was rolling out this new energy plan, he said that was something that they wanted to address. But the concern is if it's not addressed in this particular piece of legislation, they're not going to be able to have the money to take advantage of some of these benefits that's in this particular proposal. So, you know, if you're kind of cutting them off at the legs.
They don't increase the size of the pie, but they're increasing the number of entities that compete for the funding, too, right?
Right. Right. And, you know, like they're redefining, they've kind of thrown out all these alternative energy, you know, plans that they've had in the past. And they're redefining what constitutes alternative energy to the point that some of the gas or the big coal companies, coal-fired power plants could actually get in there and
right.
use some of these credits. Which
do we have any sense about where the DeWine administration stands on any of this?
The governor has said that he believes that steps should be taken to keep the nuclear power plants open.
Okay.
But he has not spoken explicitly about House Bill 6 and whether or not he likes the details in that. So it's really TBD.
Okay. And Joe Ingles, what's up for you this
week?
Well,
I'm going to be covering that abortion bill we were talking about a little bit ago, and I'll also be staying up on the Senate budget, which I think is going to be super interesting because we're going to see some things coming about that were not in the House budget, and it's setting up for a showdown here in the future as to, you know, who goes against who.
All right.
Yeah, and on Monday, the Speaker and the House Minority Leader are going to introduce their priority bills.
Today?
So, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's
oh,
May.
Yeah. Yeah,
time for some priority
yeah,
bills.
That's it.
Time to set some priorities. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Jesse Ballmer, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, thanks to you as well.
Always fun.
And Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, thanks again.
My pleasure.
Thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.